When you can score the karate kick, but your team still can't win, it's That So MLS. With myself, Nick Thornton, and with me as always is Andrew Bates.
Nick, how are you doing?
I am well. This, of course, is a North American soccer podcast where we look at news from around MLS, but also NWSL, USL, etc. Soccer weekend, some interesting results around the league, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it was billed as a big game in Vancouver. Did you get to attend the Cascadia clash with Seattle?
Oh, we're going to start there. Yes, I did get to attend this game. Did you get to see any of it?
So I watched the first half. I watched like the first 60 minutes in a pool hall in St. John, and then caught the rest the next day.
Okay. What's your assessment of the game? Because, like, I was there, I've watched the highlights, I have my opinion about it. How do you sort of break this game down?
So my thought after the Whitecaps scored again, this is our watch of all the times that people score right at the end of the half at 45 plus 4. I was not feeling so great after the second goal, and then as soon as that happened, right immediately I thought, this is great, this is so optimistic. The Whitecaps did not deliver on that optimism. I don't think we've sort of talked about the balance between a good Whitecaps performance and a loss and a bad Whitecaps performance and a loss being sort of the absence of like fight, you know, like the the inability to create chances, the inability to get forward, a lack of energy in the midfield. And you could see, I don't know if it's fair or not to judge just the second half on that, because, you know, that's when they put themselves in a position. Mm-hmm. They could have done a lot more. The first half was just disappointing, and I don't have a great statement on that, but I felt that they did try to get back into it, but that obviously was not successful.
No, and I mean, it's the point of the season where it's easy to just look at teams in form and say, well, coming into this, Seattle was the clear favorite to win this game. This is now their ninth win in a row. That being said, I thought Seattle looked pretty bad for most of the night. And I think the Whitecaps partially got a little bit lucky, but also had a good game plan going into it to just go after Seattle and shut them down.
Yeah.
Really exploit their fullbacks, neither of whom are particularly good. Seattle does well with possession, and they do well with all their attacking players, but they are kind of leaky on the sides, and they really did try to exploit that. The trouble is that three or four chances gone in the first 15 minutes with just some horrendous misses from Mosqueda.
Yeah.
You really did feel like, okay, that was our shot, and it's probably not going to come again. We probably can score a goal here, but two or three is optimistic. I went into this game fully okay with a point. A point would have been, to me, a big statement to slow the Seattle bus down. I can understand the disappointment of Whitecaps fans to lose the Cascadia Cup at home to their rivals. However, being pragmatic about it, it's like, well, Seattle's beat just about every team, and recently, what would make us think the Whitecaps would be equal to the task? What's so frustrating about it is I think the Whitecaps overall played pretty well, but because there wasn't the execution there, it did end up costing us. And the two errors that gave up the two goals were really the only chances that Seattle had. And unfortunately, it was the kid, Brett Levis, who was just caught out once in a bad position. And the second time plays an awful square ball to Marinovic, but plays it too slow and it's pounced on. So it's hard to glean a ton from this game, but as a fan, I'm thinking going forwards, like, this is, it really does kind of suck the wind out of our sails.
You make the right point about the tie, because, you know, Kamara hits the post, if I recall. So if that had gone in, or if any of those earlier chances that you had talked about had gone in, things would have been completely different. A lot of the talk that I saw on Twitter was about Breck Shea.
Mm-hmm.
Can you confirm this story that Russell Beresford posted on Twitter?
I cannot, in fact. I didn't see any of that happening in the game.
Did you hear about it?
I did hear about it afterwards.
So apparently he tweets that Shea is coming on and a guy in the crowd is shouting, "No! Don't bring Breck Shea on!"
Which I love. It's not even like a heckle. It's just a no! It's such a sincere cry of like, please no.
He shouts no. Robbo turns and stares him down. The guy tries to get to the touchline to, I don't know, plead with him? And then is brought away by security is the suggestion. Rough. And then apparently he also got his ankles broken not once but twice in the same play.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. It was all bad. Yeah, I mean...
That's figurative. Nico Ladero dribbled him out of his shoes.
Yes. Yes. However, the ankles might be a little sore after that. Mm. And that's where, like, in the second half, seeing Seattle coming towards us and the supporter section, you do see the threat that they possess. I still think... Overall, the Whitecaps did a really good job of shutting them down. I thought Waston had a much better game than he's had in a while. I thought Henry looked really good. I thought Nowinski did okay, considering what he was up against. It's unfortunate, though, that I don't know if De Jong is injured, but I just think, like, you've got... what's his name? The new Seattle guy. Rui Diaz.
Raul Rui Diaz.
Running against you, and he's running against a kid who's only just played one game of 90 minutes this season. So I think it was a little bit unfair. He might have been the only fit left back to put, but he was just getting overpowered time and time again.
Is that a bit of an indictment of I guess, sort of the way that Carl Robinson has played things, that he hasn't got that amount of ability to show his stuff?
It's hard because at this point I feel like you're sort of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. To me, this is one of the games where maybe you play Alphonso Davies as left back and play Breck Shea in front of him and hope that having Davies behind gives you a bit of coverage. So at least you've got the speed there. However, you know, the choice was made for whatever reason it was made. The disappointing thing here is that so many of the things that we've done wrong this season, I feel like we're tidied up in this game. Apart from the two defensive errors, again, coming through a young player who hasn't had a lot of minutes. But I thought Ghazal and Tybert, especially Ghazal, looked absolutely fantastic. They were sweeping up everything in midfield. It reminded me of the Matias Laba days of just relentless pressing of the midfielders. So Seattle really had no option but to go down the wings.
That's always been a match that you've enjoyed, and a matchup between those two players, and it seems to have been successful, or not successful, but it seems to have been effective.
Well, it says a lot too that when Rabo's making his substitutions, there was really no question that Felipe or Juarez wouldn't come on because they weren't needed. Which still says a lot about our squad right now, is that two of the big, quote-unquote, big-name signings that we brought in are expensive bench warmers at this point in the season, because even with the result, I don't know what putting either of them on would have really done. And I believe it was... I think I have this right. I think it was Ghazal for Jordan Much. Mm-hmm. So going for a bit more of an attacking option when they really did need to dig themselves out of the hole, which I think is a good substitution. And Jordan Much also almost had a goal from a back heel.
Yeah. I think that the fun thing, the thing you note, or it's not a fun thing, it's a sad thing. when you talk about sort of like fixing a lot of the problems, is that unfortunately there's not a lot of time left to capitalize on having fixed that. Because there's only six games left of the season, strange mm-hmm. to say. And for the Whitecaps, they've got Dallas, both LAs, Toronto, Sporting KC, and Portland. Which is... the weird MLS thing where none of those are easy games except both LA's and Toronto, which can simultaneously be completely unbeatable one game and like absolutely absolute pushovers the next.
I would say flip a coin for any of those games really at this point. The one thing that I thought it was notable about this game, and this is maybe proof of just where I'm at in denial and lack of engagement as a fan, is that I thought the refereeing was actually pretty decent in this game. And I know every supporter in the world or that was at the game will disagree with me, but there was kind of a weird call where Alonso clips Davies at the top of the box and Davies goes down in a heap, obviously really trying to milk it. And then there's a Whitecaps foul on a Seattle player. So the ref stops play and everybody starts getting really riled up because they think the whistle is on the Whitecaps player. I believe it was Gasol. And then the referee starts slowly, slowly walking back towards Seattle end. And then finally people kind of see him with his finger to his ear. So they know he's varring something or getting word about something, but nobody knows what. Which play it is.
Yeah.
So there's no indication to the audience for this whole for the crowd for this whole time, including the video review. And then he goes up to Alonso and gives him a yellow, which I was very confused by. And then my friend Tim sort of explained it to me where it was like, so he was being called back to look at a challenge on Davies that might have been a red. And he reviewed it and decided it's a yellow. But the play had already continued on for like a good 30 seconds after that foul. So then it's brought all the way back to the Seattle end for a free kick and Alonso gets booked for a yellow.
Oh, that's a negative of that's a negative aspect of the timing of VAR, huh?
A little, yeah, and I mean at the end of it I go, okay, I guess VAR worked. I didn't know that. I thought it was like you gotta give a red or nothing in that case, but apparently you can decide to give a yellow. But it just really kind of halted play and nobody, including the players, really understood what was going on or what was being reviewed. The unfortunate thing, too, is so much so that it's not until the referee like draws the line for the free kick that the Whitecaps realize that they've won a free kick. And Mosquito comes sauntering up and just he's not ready. His teammates aren't ready. And they just completely blow a perfect opportunity at a good distance. But overall, I felt like the referee did a very good job of keeping play flowing, and there was a lot of heavy tackles, including some late ones, and for the most part, he kept his cards in his pocket, and he just let play on, mm-hmm. and I would say pretty evenly to both teams, just signaled for them to get up. There's an awful lot of sounder floundering in the final 25 minutes.
It seemed like through the first, both coaches were a little dissatisfied as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it was a strong performance from either side in the first half. But again, we make two mistakes and put ourselves in a hole. So, yeah, where we put this game, I don't know.
I think it all, unfortunately, it sews up the Cascadia Cup stuff. I think it's great for, it may be the turning point. You can't say that the ninth game in a nine-game winning streak is the turning point. But it may help to cement Seattle's position in the table as Vancouver and LA look to champ at their heels.
I'm going to call it now just so that I can be proven wrong later. Atlanta-Seattle final.
Interesting. You see them as a potential contender.
I do. I mean, considering what they've done the last 2 years, and the stretch they're on, they were not playing at their best by any stretch. But I really do feel like there's very few teams Seattle can't beat at this point in the season.
It's easy to say. Well, it doesn't really matter what happens as long as you're hot coming into the playoffs. However, there's still a lot of time to go between now and then.
Yep, absolutely. I feel like at the rate they're playing, they put themselves in a really good position to get through to the bye, and that might hurt them. They might need a knockout round to just sort of cement things, but just looking at the teams that they've beat and the way they play, it's really hard to imagine them not slicing through most Western opponents.
So the night that I went to the pool hall, before I left, I watched Toronto FC and left the Toronto FC game when they were 2-0 up against the Galaxy. thinking, probably we're done here. Doesn't seem like there's a lot left in this game.
Just six more goals.
Just six more goals. When I look at the 5-3 storyline and I see that, I just think of the meme where the two Spider-Man are pointing at each other.
Yeah. Here's my notes for this game. This was buck wild. MLS defenders, take a bow. You're literally the worst. And the
take
funny
a
thing
seat.
Is,
take a seat, I guess. Nobody's interested.
Despite the unbelievable Ibra karate kick and the late surge them, even here's the really depressing thing. Even though Toronto won, and they won by scoring five goals, this was a terrible game and such a damning indictment of both teams that this was literally like, people are like, Toronto could still win. Like, yeah, who's Toronto beat? The worst teams in the league. Like, LA Galaxy has one of the worst back lines in the league right now. And it was on full display that night. And I just, it's depressing. It's depressing that these are the top build teams and there's all this pomp and circumstance around them, and neither one can defend for their lives. It's beyond unacceptable. It was just a shambles.
It goes to something that we've talked about with MLS teams, and I think that the composition of both of these sides exemplifies it, which is to be attractive to a new audience, to be promoted, to have a lot of offensive flair, you load up on players in the front half of the field and figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And
neither team will. And neither team probably will.
It's just
both of these teams are missing the playoffs.
I also love the little spat between Ibrahimovic and Michael Bradley, where they're arguing in midfield, and then after the match, Ibra's in the press conference saying that, you know, Michael Bradley thinks he's a philosopher of the game, but he should listen to me because I've got more goals. And I'm like, yeah, but your team sucks and you still lost, you oaf. Like, it's not Ibra FC. Like, no one cares if your team loses. Like, and that's the funny thing is LA and MLS still sort of bill it as like, it's the goal of the season. It's like, is this the best goal in MLS ever? And I'm like,
No, it's not.
It's not even one of Ibra's best ever. And the team still lost, and they're still probably like going to crash out of the playoffs if they even make it. So, what are we celebrating here?
So, if you're like me and you are in some extent, I saw like the back. I then went back and rewatched the game until it got to 3-3, and then started watching an NWSL game, which we'll talk about in a minute. Mm-hmm. So Vasquez scores on 5 minutes. Great goal. With his head, very rare to see him do that. Mm-hmm. Altidore scores again on 16 minutes. 36 minutes, Sebastian Giovinco scores to make it 3-0. Great, right? Then.
What could go wrong?
44 minutes. You described it as a karate kick. It's like a deflection. If I was to name the karate kick, it would be like a roundhouse. Where he is roundhousing his foot and then just getting his foot to the precise angle which to direct it into the goal. I would say that in terms of like, it's definitely not the best goal. Would you even say that it's better than his first goal that he scored in MLS? But what made it specifically astounding was that it was a goal of like a crazy goal. Like,
yeah, it's so bizarre
whatever.
That people are like, I've never seen that before. But technically, I think, like, I don't want to say anything with Ibrahimovic's luck when he scores, but like, it's just one of those things where you're like, yeah, bizarre as hell, and like, good for him for getting the goal. But I wouldn't even call it the goal of the week, to be honest. And that's not just me being an Ibra hater. It is just an odd slice. There's nothing all that remarkable about it where you're like, I mean, to pull that off. I'm not saying I could do it.
I'm gonna be a little more impressed than you.
Okay.
I do think that it's really good. I do think that it is a marvel, and where people are sort of having this sort of sense of wonder about it is the combination of if it's a 4-star out of 5-star goal, well, to score that a goal of that magnitude in a moment of that magnitude is still pretty impressive. To have your 500th club and country between club and country, your 500th goal.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody's done the Pele count to make sure that that's actually true.
Probably not.
Sometimes these numbers are hard to like go down and calculate each individual goal. But to have that be the goal and to have it be a pretty dang good goal is impressive.
Yeah, I guess it was pretty good. No.
It was not the first goal LA would score. Ola Kamara, 10 minutes later, would score on the 54th minute. It was great to see him score because you know that I enjoy him and we like seeing him, his success, after being switched from Columbus. Then Rolf Felcher, I don't know that I saw this one, scores to make a 3-3. Jonathan Osorio scores the game-winning goal on the 75th minute. And in the 94th minute, Jay Chapman makes it 5-4. Which is just so much. There's just so much there.
There is. And the impressive, my positive takeaway here is young Canadian kids. Jay Chapman's Canadian, right?
Jay Chapman. Oh, I want to say he's from Florida.
Yeah, I think he's an American. He's young, though. Young North American talent on display. Let's leave it at that.
He's from Brampton. He's from Brampton. He's 24. What a good Canadian kid.
Oh, okay. Whew, I got it right for once. Yes. But I knew Osorio was Canadian. I know he's not young, but that to me, I put a poll up on our Twitter asking if Osorio's goal was better than Ibra's, but nobody voted for him. So we got some work to do on the fan base. One Canadian team that is good and has gotten consistently better and had a big, big result this week is Montreal, crushing Philadelphia at home.
Montreal's going to probably end up in the, well, Montreal has a little bit more. When I look at the West and I look at Seattle on 44, Portland on 44, Vancouver on 40, LA on 38, I think that there's a big swing in form that has to happen for that situation to change. The Philadelphia on 40, Montreal on 39 as 5-6, and then DC on 35 and New England on 34. That looks a little bit more dicey to me in terms of the way that Columbus's form is going. But this 4-1 win by the Montreal Impact away to Philadelphia has done so much to aid their position.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, it's going to get real interesting between them and D.C. As well as Philadelphia. I agree. Like, it's just... Oh, man. It's exciting that the Eastern Conference is exciting again.
It's true.
But it is also notable that there's only two teams that have clinched and they're both Eastern teams. So the West is still, I'd say, more competitive. And, you know, we don't actually know who will end up being number one in the Western Conference. And we probably won't until the final game of the season.
And the East still has a dismal record in interconference play, at least anecdotally.
Yeah. At least anecdotally. According to the evidence in my brain. This one was, I feel like Montreal's surge coupled with the DC surge has clearly written the book that Toronto's out. I don't think they can squeak past these other two. If they do, then I will be yet again eating my words about Toronto. I just think that these two teams are too in form and will continue to pick up points.
That sounds about right.
Philadelphia, questionable. Considering they dropped three big points here, Montreal is also aided by the fact that this was kind of a quiet signing for some reason. Is that Bakary Sagna is there now?
Yeah,
Arsenal man.
Are you excited to see him in the league?
I am excited to see him in the league. He's getting on in years, but I think the Montreal system works perfect for him. Another good French player. He obviously understands the system and has given them a bit of a boost. Again, some young players coming in and really helping Montreal out. Not dissimilar, I guess, from Seattle, is just having a really slow start to the season and taking a long time to figure out what they needed to do right. it's hard to see how far Montreal might go against some of those top flight teams in the East or the West, but I thought they looked fantastic. It was also some really uncharacteristic mistakes from Andre Blake in this game, who's been such a good presence for them, but he comes out of the goal too late on one, he gets nutmegged on another one, and it was just also some really poor defensive positioning from Philadelphia, where they gave up the ball and they've got only two defenders back, and they give up the ball in Montreal's end and get caught out. They got caught out on a corner kick on a counterattack. It was really, to me, a lot about the defensive positioning, not so much a poor defensive performance, which is also, I think, a thing that Philadelphia will certainly look at and be able to tighten up. It's not, their defense isn't a shambles. It just, a little leaky that night.
What's wacky about Montreal right now is that when I saw the highlight reel for this, it kind of looked like they were a chaos team in some ways. If you look at it, they had 40% possession. It was 40%, 60% for Philadelphia, but they had 15-9 shots advantage. So they're just throwing everything forward. The balls, some of these goals that are coming in, I'm thinking of the second goal, the tighter goal specifically, are, you know, like three or four people coming in on net and just ricochet things in. And the thing that was the most funny I thought about this, because I was looking at this video for what's the influence of Ignacio Piatti, and what the influence of Piatti is in some cases, because there have been times last year and this year where he is like the only thing happening for them. But in the case of this goal, and I think that he's had a great role. He had three assists in this game, and this was the only one he didn't. He held back and drew two or three people off of the actual attacking play.
Yeah.
So he's got this effect, this Piatti effect, where even when he's not scoring, he's commanding so much attention that it frees up people around him to be doing greater things.
Yeah, no, I think about it as it's similar to Martinez in Atlanta, is that people forget about Viaba. And because everybody's crowded around Martinez, and you're like, oh, wait, they still have like two really good attacking players that are wide open now. And I full credit to Piatti. I think he's one of the best in the league. But it's not so much a Piatti effect. It's the effect of a player who understands the game extremely well. I'd say it's similar to Bradley Wright Phillips, who we'll also get to tonight. That they know where to be and they know how to contribute, even if they're not the one scoring the goal. That's how good they are. And that's how much a difference maker they can be.
Yeah, absolutely. The run back on that is Austin Trusty gets the first goal. Just because there are so many, we may as well read it out. Alejandro Silva scores the first on 28 minutes, and then it's tighter. Quincy Amerequois, who is another great acquisition in the middle of the season, and Silva on 63, and then Silva scores on 76. Mm-hmm. That's another point to make when you talk about Sonia, you talk about Alejandro Silva, you talk about Amerequois. They have not only evolved over the course of the season, they've evolved while signing new players, which is occasionally a challenge. Sometimes signing new players can upset a delicate balance, but they've been able to do a lot.
Yeah, no, and bringing those players into the fold quickly and getting them up to speed with the system. I think Montreal, you know, has made some blunders in the past with the types of signings they make, but at the same time, they bring in players that are going to get the system, and I think they've been quite clever with most of them, that there hasn't been this tremendous stretch of games where players have to figure out the league play or the team play.
Silva was another midseason signing as well.
Right, yeah.
And you could definitely see them hold their position, especially, you know, it's the opposite of the Seattle one, where this was a result they really needed to get against a team above them in the table to elevate them to the same position.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yeah. So DC United squared off against New York Red Bulls. And if you're looking at a 3-3 result, I think both teams were pretty not okay with. You could think that we would just say, oh, both teams are terrible at defending. However, one team was terrible at defending in this game, and it was New York Red Bulls. The thing, I actually thought for the most part, DC was pretty compact and pretty decisive with most of their defensive work, but it's Bradley Wright Phillips. And I actually think his bicycle kick that comes out of nowhere and he's got three guys crowded around him is my goal of the week as well.
What makes it so like so Bradley Wright Phillips? We've seen bicycle kick goals before. You'd scarcely say there's no that they're all pretty, but this one kind of comes off his shin in the middle of three people. Yeah. So it doesn't you know, you probably won't see it in the Sports Center list of 100 great sports moments of the year, because it doesn't come across well on camera. You know, it traces an uneven line into the goal.
It doesn't even look like it's going to go in when he goes to do it. It looks like he's just going to whiff it.
But it's so effective, and it especially coming after DC scored its first goal. It's so important, and it's in the 41st minute, so again near the end of the half. It's so important to put New York on even footing and get them into a situation where they can make something work.
And the Red Bulls' greatest strength and at times greatest weakness is that they have Bradley Wright Phillips, who took this game on his back and carried his team across the finish line to give them a point that they quite frankly didn't deserve. Overall, the team was incredibly sloppy with their play, terrible in possession, really not good defensively, all but handed it to DC, who took their chances really well as well. But if Bradley Wright Phillips decides he's not leaving without a point, it's pretty damn hard to stop him. And that goal as well is kind of out of nothing. It's not even a good ball into the box. And it's like Bradley Wright Phillips just decides. He's like, nah, this one's going in. We need... No. It's going in.
He also, to my money, and I meant to be looking at this one, but I was working at the time. So I saw the highlights. To my money, the Wayne Rooney goal that everybody sort of crows over, because like we did last week, we all say, hey, Wayne Rooney. which was, if I recall, another like little first touch pass, a first touch effort. Is pretty much the same as the 90-minute Bradley Wright Phillips goal. So he not only does he score his hat-trick goal on the 90th minute, giving his team the win, he also sort of just like, anything you can do, I can do better.
One absolutely. Up to Rooney. This did at times feel a little bit like a Rooney versus Bradley Wright Phillips match, but I would say DC overall as a team played much better. And I don't... It says so much that they're disappointed with a point against New York Red Bulls.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a tremendous achievement and says so much about how far they've come in such a short period of time this season. So I know they'll be disappointed, but what an incredible thing for them to feel at the end of a game like that. Disappointed, of course, because, you know, 3 points would have got them within a point of Montreal. And now they've got a bit of work to do. So there's a chance they may not make the playoffs despite this late run. But, you know, anything is possible with the way they're playing.
It's all, as much as anything else, it would be obviously there's going to be a lot of people in D.C., a lot of Wayne Rooney fans, and a lot of people in the league office who would love to see them make the playoffs. But I do think that D.C., are ending the season right, regardless of how things go in terms of the playoffs, with how bad they went last year and how bad things were looking at the beginning of this year. Yeah. This is a massive result for them.
Yeah, if they don't make it, you got to feel it'll be only just, and fans can go away knowing that they don't need to clean deck over the offseason. They need to tighten a few things up, but they don't need to add a ton of players or really push too much. They've got the right ingredients. So if they don't make it, of course it will be disappointing, but you still got to think they're doing everything right.
Their next game, for some reason, they're playing CD Olympia tonight, which, if I recall, is a Costa Rican side. So I don't know why they're doing a friendly tonight, but there we are.
Sure.
Their next league game is on the 29th against Montreal, and that's
DC?
A heck of a yeah.
Ooh, that'll be a good matchup. Okay.
Yeah. Montreal plays one more before them, I think, because I would assume they play next weekend. Because TFC plays next weekend. So, right.
Sure, yeah, DC has a bye week, I think, coming up.
Which is probably maybe why they did the maybe why they thought they had time to do the friendly. Maybe that's all it comes down to.
Keep the ball literally rolling.
Put more home games in Audi Field after you are only operating for half a season.
Yeah.
So they play Chicago twice before the end of the year.
Hmm.
So it's kind of funny that, you know, this time last month or the month before, you could kind of look at them in Chicago as being in the same place. And now it's oh man, we get to play Chicago twice.
Well, but on that note, Chicago, okay, yes, they played Orlando and they're not even a team at this point, but Chicago gets a big 4-0 win. And I just put here, it was so good to see Chicago take advantage of something for once. Because you have to think going into this game, Chicago's got to win this. But I was expecting like a 1-0, maybe a 2-0 to put a statement on it. Now, Orlando played terribly as they have all season. But Chicago actually took their chances and looked much better. And it's really interesting that apparently doing late season invitationals where you get creamed by your best player's former club in Germany actually help you.
Oh yeah, they did a testimonial, didn't they?
They did a testimonial with Bayern Munich. Flew the entire first team over to Munich. They got destroyed by Bayern Munich. I believe Schweinsteiger also played with Bayern Munich in that game, or at least part of the game. I can't remember how it worked.
That can't be a weirder choice in such a down season, but I love testimonials, so I can't argue with it.
But the funny thing is it obviously, I mean, it worked for at least one game, but you think as much as when I saw it, I was like, what is like only in MLS in the middle, like right in the final stretch of games, everything's on the line. Your team sucks. Hey guys, let's go to Germany and get whipped by one of the best clubs in Europe because our captain once played there. But now we're kind of like, why not? What did they have to lose? And it was a bonding experience as maybe reinvigorating them and realizing just how much talent they do have on their team, at least through one player, did the trick and put a pretty emphatic victory on this one. The game itself wasn't particularly interesting, but Chicago looked much more organized and it was nice to see them execute a game plan well.
As much as the drawing aspects of soccer are hard to talk about sometimes because you never want to acknowledge like another team's drawing ability when it's like means that they're a better team. You're kind of right about the bonding experience that like, you know, there's not a lot of opportunities to play Bayern Munich at home in front of their full crowd in an emotionally invested game, even if it's a friendly and it's kind of fun.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, who doesn't want to play in front of 75,000 people?
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not you're getting completely destroyed by the home club.
The names that you see on the score sheet for Chicago versus Orlando are the names that you need to see performing, the absolute talent that they have, as you mentioned, other than Schweinsteiger, who for some reason is playing center back. This is something we've talked about a little bit, where it's like he just seems to be filling in all over the place, which is, again, an element of MLS not having like pretty much every team having shifting sands.
Which for me is like, what's Schweinsteiger making a year? 3 million, 4 million, 6 million, 7 million?
Not sure off the top of my head, but
at that point, why not, like, 250 grand will get you a good center back.
4.5 million USD.
Right, okay. So somewhere in the middle there. Again, half a million will get you two good center backs. Two serviceable center backs. Now, like, I get it. Schweinsteiger can play anything. But why don't you just get two proper center backs? I don't understand the logic that they just don't spread the money around a little bit more. Like, yeah.
These are two teams that are adjacent in the table that both have maybe Chicago a little bit more than Orlando. But when you look at their lineup, have absolute stars in this league that can make an impact. And haven't been able to do that this year. So Orlando replaced their coach and Chicago didn't. Remains to see what happens with that. A great result for Chicago. And like I said with DC, for non-playoff teams, the most important part is to end the season positively.
Yeah, exactly. And credit to them for doing that. And I hope they keep it up. And why not make a few teams in the East sweat, thinking like, oh no, Chicago's getting good at the wrong time. What if they take our chances of getting that final playoff spot? Why not?
Wouldn't it be funny if they took points off DC? Like, you can't... you know where you belong, DC!
It's MLS. Why not?
Another team that scored 4 goals is... And as a matter of fact, scored 5. It just happened that one of them was for the other team. Was Houston Dynamo, who went 4-1 over Portland.
My first note on this game was just, is Houston good? Because it looks like they're not even sure.
Yeah.
It's been weird to see this sort of Portland skid out, considering they've had some really good runs and at times have looked, again, like as good as any team in MLS. Great news for the Whitecaps, I hope.
Yeah.
But this game was really painful, really, really painful to watch. I'll let you fill in your commentary before I say why, but you might have a clue as to why it was so painful.
Well, so like you know, with the talent that Portland has, to have their only goal be an own goal scored very early is quite the statement. The first goal, sort of the equalizer from Houston, from Albert Elise, is a header that is the kind of thing that is just, you know, is exactly in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And then you've got a brace from Mauro Manotas, who is wearing the coal miner's glove.
Looked like a Hulk fist.
I don't know. It just seemed, what more than anything else. So Houston ends the first half 2-1. This is not an unbeatable situation.
Nope.
But from 45 to the 71st, when Houston does eventually score, it was 4-1, right? Oh yeah, the league website has a typo where it says Portland scored twice.
That's because they did, but Valeri was called offside, and so the second goal is disallowed.
That's right. Until that point, Valeri scores when it is 3-1, right? So until they score that third goal, they did not put up a lot in terms of offense, in terms of that fight that makes you think that they're going to be able to score. It's more like, how is Houston not scoring?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I noted here is that Portland does not do particularly well against teams with a lot of speed. Yeah. And that's one thing that Houston has consistently had, is they're an incredibly fast team. Not the best on the ball, not the best defensively. But if you want a team that can break on you, that's them. But the defending on those final two goals was just the... It's not even bad positioning or bad decision-making. It was just the utter lack of will to mark a player and to shut down the ball. Steve Clark was in net tonight. I don't know if Gleason's injured or what his deal is, but I'm assuming so. I thought Clark could have had an okay game, but he just had no help from his defenders. Yeah. And I played last night in goal, and I mean, I also had an absolute horrific, horrific night of decision-making and playmaking. But it's a similar kind of thing, is if people aren't closing down the ball, sorry, any teammates that are listening to this, and you're just getting peppered from close range with close range shots, sooner or later, they're going to go in. And the whole team back to front for Portland just looked like there was no fight in them. There was nothing that they were putting into this game to try to win it. And that last 40 minutes, it was just painful. I'm surprised it only ended 4-1.
I'm seeing that Portland used the Christmas tree 4-3-2-1 formation. I don't know that going straight down the center against a 4-3-3 team is great.
No.
So that is probably, I don't know if that's new. I don't always see, he scored a bunch the other day, but this Jeremy Ebobise, I don't know, Ebobise, I don't know that that lone forward, even if it's a 4-3-2-1 where there's two behind him, is Portland's look.
No, and maybe chalk it up to experimentation, but this is still a number of bad results they've gotten in recent times. So, you know, they're tied with Seattle now at 44 points. Vancouver's behind at 40 points. Things are starting to look like, you know, if the Whitecaps can turn things around, they could claw up if teams continue to drop points in the West.
Yeah, no doubt. I got to see the Dallas and Columbus highlights where they fizzled each other out.
Yep.
0-0 result there. I always love when you're looking at the league's highlights on YouTube and you get to a certain point in the 4 minutes and you realize, wow, nothing's happening yet, huh?
Yeah, there ain't a lot of time left in this highlight.
And we're still in the first half. Wow. I think that's, you know, not showing cards close to the chest while the playoffs approach from two potential contenders.
I sort of two teams that kind of needed results, and probably fair that neither one really got much out of it. The thing I put here is that Columbus has had a few of these over the season. And credit to the Columbus is where they are because when they're not winning games, they're tying them.
Yeah.
And they're not losing, which is good, and not giving up goals, which is also good. They've got a very good defensive record. They have the third fewest goals given up in MLS, in the Eastern Conference, rather, sorry. The thing I put here is this is awfully frightening for Dallas because this is not the first time that they've entered a goal drought, and the fact that it's happening so late in the season has to be ringing some alarm bells for them.
Yeah.
That they have struggled to score goals at points this season, and then they've been able to pick them up in sort of large clusters. Defensively, they've been fairly solid. But it's really not the time of the season to have games where you can't find the back of the net and you can't have your forwards step up and get something for you. So that will be the thing for me to watch is what they're able to do over the coming weeks and whether or not this goal drought continues. Now, at 50 points, to keep racking up a point here, a point there, one more point would have them level with Sporting Kansas and number one in the West. So it's not a bad place to be.
Nope.
However, yeah, form can mean a lot at this time of the year. And as we've seen, especially with Dallas's forwards, once they seem to hit that skid, it doesn't shake off easily.
I only saw the second half of Colorado Atlanta, which was the worst one, as Atlanta scored each of their three goals in the first.
Oh, I didn't even put it on my list. I missed that one. I think I was just like, yep, checks out. Nothing to write. Why watch it?
Well, they you know, it's Atlanta, it's Colorado. That's what you'd expect.
Yeah.
RSL Minnesota, which I understand from the highlights that I was able to see, were a case where RSL had the 1-0 lead at home in Minnesota, then equalized and then had a second, but that was called off. So RSL extremely lucky to get the point at home.
Yeah, and I mean, they've just been RSL has had a couple of nice little surges in recent weeks, and credit to them. But so is Minnesota. I don't really know what to say about this game. I need to see more games of both. Admittedly, I've not really been paying a ton of attention to Minnesota, but it seems like this is kind of what happens when Minnesota and RSL face each other: is both walk away with a point.
LAFC, who seems to have had such a good start to the year, even though their form has slipped, that they're kind of like untouchable.
Yeah.
Like they can do whatever and they're still going to probably finish fourth.
It's so bizarre, isn't it?
Like, yeah, like there's just because things are relatively stable elsewhere, have a 1-1 draw with New England.
Yep. They do. Again, another game where I think it's kind of fair. It's baffling to me that Los Angeles or LAFC is still as high up in the table in the West as they are, because they've just had so many games that they've lost or not gotten anything out of. It's difficult because you've got a third place team against an eighth place team. I thought New England played okay, as they've done in many games this season. I think LAFC needed to step it up more. And the fact that they couldn't put this one to bed, I don't know if that's enough to cause them great concern. But, you know, not having their strong center back and captain is maybe something that's playing on their nerves a little bit heading into the playoffs. But at this point, it seems like kind of a foregone conclusion that as long as they can pick up a point here, a point there, and maybe another win, they'll probably, like you say, finish fourth or third.
Yeah, this is one where they they scored on the 53rd, I think, and then were coughed up a goal late in the 82nd to only get the point.
Yeah.
The swan song. This is where we can talk about this of San Jose's manager.
Yes.
San Jose won. Sporting Kansas City 5 away. We'll put an end to things, won't it?
It sure will. And I watched the highlights for this, and it was just a bit like target practice for SKC. You know, credit to San Jose. They'll always find a way to knock one in. But it is the end of Staré. He is out.
Mikhail Staré. We talked about it, how things seemed. Players were getting subbed on and off in the same game. Like throughout the year, it seemed like a real chaotic situation on and off the pitch in San Jose.
It's to be fair, I was seeing some comments from San Jose fans, and they sounded an awful lot like Vancouver Whitecaps fans, that just the club has refused to spend money on players. And just at this point, I think it's fair to ask, like, what is San Jose's ambition? Because there's been no signal in the last 3 or 4 years that they're really putting much into the club. And that poor performances just seem to have become the norm. The fact that Staré has kept his job for so long is sort of baffling.
This is a question that SI's Grant Wall is asked, as we're in sort of the coach firing part of the season. Carl Robinson, turn off your phone. As we're in the coach firing part of the season, he sort of asked on Twitter as a part of a podcast he was posting that where is the accountability for GMs in a scenario where, you know, they're kind of the coach can sometimes only do what they can with the pieces that they've been given.
Absolutely. It reminds me, there was a guy walking up and down the aisles at the Whitecaps game with a Bobby out sign. But I'm like, he also partially owns the team, so I don't think we're getting rid of Bobby Leonarduzzi anytime soon. But
no,
it's a big story in Europe all the time about owners and GMs that are pocketing tons of cash and doing right by themselves, but not necessarily delivering to the club. And I think it's a fair question to ask. It's a difficult one to answer, and I'm not sure is the only answer, but I think it tells us a lot about how the league is set up, that at the end of the day, it's going to be the players and the coach that bear the brunt of any bad results, and the GMs are more or less untouchable. Anthony Precourt.
I think that's it for MLS games. One game that I did watch on the weekend was the NWSL semifinal between Portland and Seattle.
Yes.
Like the final game of the regular season, Seattle Reign scored first with Jess Fishlock involved with a free kick that came to Jasmine Spencer. But like the final game of the season, Portland came back, scored two more. A slick Lindsay Horan to Tobin Heath move before halftime to get things level. And then in the second half, Christine Sinclair getting an assist with a cross into Horan, who got her own goal. Portland's looking great. I didn't get to see the other semifinal, which saw the Courage make it to the final to create a rematch for the second straight year between Portland and North Carolina. The Courage certainly look better than they did last year, and are coming off of their record-setting season. So last year's was sort of a really tense 1-0 slugfest, but I really feel like this year's final is going to be something exciting to see on Saturday the 22nd. And I'll have the time for you in just a half a second.
Yeah.
4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific.
Nice.
So watch that on NWSLsoccer.com.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you have you had a couple of little pieces in terms of players moving in and out?
Yeah, nothing too major, but just keeping it on people's radar because it's the time of year where news gets easily lost in the noise. Philadelphia added a striker named, I'm going to try this last name and I'll be the first in MLS to butcher it, Rizbilko?
Uh-huh.
From Germany. Looks like a good pedigree player and shoring up things into the final stretch. And they also signed Brendan Aronson, homegrown player deal, effective start of 2019. So I am trying to pay more attention to the homegrown players coming through so I can stop just whining about teams being all about bringing in players from afar, but the players they're bringing up domestically. And also Real Salt Lake added a veteran defender from England, Nedim Onuwa. I used to know it because he used to be in FIFA 09. He's an older player. Anua. I think it's just Anua. He spent a good chunk of his time at QPR, so I feel like that's a good pickup for them. Teams just trying to bring in players at the end of the season. Obviously, a few kind of we'll see how they shake out, and they may be back next season. They may not be, but just keeping it on folks' radar.
The Philadelphia Union also added a mascot called Fong.
Oh, jeez. yeah, I forgot about that.
Was hatched in a gobbledygooker Dungeon of Doom staged event at the zoo where mist was pumping through the area as it burst out of an egg, and a lot of people asked, what is that?
It's a snake with legs and arms.
Isn't that a lizard? People are asking on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. You just, I so wish I could have sat in on that marketing meeting. It's a snake with legs. What don't you get about it, Jerry?
Speaking of marketing meetings, the Union had this amazing video today where they were showing players from the Union's FIFA 19 stat cards. And they were going through them. And then they had one that was that was like really, really good, like 70s and 60s across the board. And everybody tried to guess it and they couldn't. And it was revealed that it was Brad Guzan with passing and shooting in the 70s or space and shooting in the 70s. And the players were losing their mind. Like, we have to change the formation. He's better than you. But they actually messed up the graphics, so the numbers were right, but the FIFA goalkeeper cards all have different like stats on them, like ball handling or whatever. So right. It's like the numbers were correct, but they didn't change the other part of the graphic.
Right.
So like it was totally their fault, but it was a really funny piece of video.
Here's my final playoffs scenario. Seattle and Atlanta United goes to penalties. Brad Guzan takes the final penalty kick and wins it for Atlanta.
Wow. Now that
Martinez misses. And Martinez misses! Oh my god, it'd be perfect.
World-class striker. One last piece of late-breaking Atlanta news! ESPN is reporting that Tata Martino is indeed gone.
What? Seriously?
Hernan Pereira says that he will not be the coach of Atlanta after the season. Both Mexico and Colombia mentioned it as destinations.
Okay, so he's not leaving before the end of the season.
Same. Yeah. But we had been saying, oh, he's making his choice, in the scuttlebutt, nothing announced officially, is that that process has reached a conclusion.
Yeah.
Final for the just because it is happening as we're taping this. TFC is 0-0 against Tigres in the Campeones Cup.
Weirdest thing to happen, but sure, why not?
This made a lot of sense when like I said earlier in the season, that Mexico had so much domination of teams, and then MLS teams won 3 games, and then they're like, let's do this every year! yeah. And it could have gone worse for Toronto since then, so I don't know if this is... They beat Tigres before, so it's not like they have to, you know, prove themselves. You know, they have to come back and right or wrong, because they won the first time. The only thing they seem to have not learned was any lesson at all, because they have picked a first choice 11 in a midweek game. You would think that if, you know, you get your TFC, you get to time travel back to the front of the season, what do? Not fucking tank half the season.
Yeah. It's a weird one. All right. I think that's it. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at That's So MLS, www.thatsomls.com, and on iTunes and wherever good podcasts are found. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Instagram at That's So MLS. I think I'm going to shut the Twitter down. Not a lot of engagement there, but people love to see the videos and the pictures and stuff. So just go to the Instagram.
You might as well keep it up.
All right, fine.
Until next week.
Did you just lose sense of time?
Let's wait here in St. John. I'm trying to remember what disciplinary action was most common this week. Until next week, don't have a goal disallowed.
Sure, I'll do my best.